Welcome back, everyone, to GDC Live right here in beautiful San Francisco. I'm like a huge fanboy over here. I'm geeking out because I played your game a while ago. So I have Brendan Wilson from System Era. The game is Astroneer.
Yeah.
I played this game, I think it was in early alpha, going into alpha. I geeked out. We were live streaming it for hours. I think Adam from the team jumped in. I was like, how cool is this? Like, one of the devs comes in, like,
thanks.
Talking to us.
He loves to do that.
So I am so excited to have you here to talk about the game and what you're doing over at System Era. So maybe first, if people aren't like me and never heard of Astroneer, just give, you know, a little bit about yourself and a little bit about the game and System Era.
Yeah, so my name is Brendan Wilson, and I'm kind of the studio head, general manager, also an engineer, wear a lot of hats at System Era. And we're a small company. We made Astroneer, it's our only game. We launched that game in December 2016 into early access, so you can get it in early access on Steam, but also in game preview for the Microsoft Store.
Oh, cool! Yeah.
So you can buy it there for Windows 10, and we're also on Xbox One. So you can get it on those three platforms. On the Windows Store, it's an XPA title, so that means Xbox Play Anywhere.
Okay, Xbox Play Anywhere. What does that mean?
Xbox Play Anywhere is a program where you can make a game for any Microsoft device, and you buy it, like, as a customer, you buy it once, and you own it through for all the devices that it's compatible with.
Got it.
And it can mean other things too, so depending on what the game supports. So in our case, if you buy it on you know, if you own it on Windows and Xbox, which again is one purchase, you get cross-platform saves, and you get cross-platform multiplayer. So you can play the game on Xbox, save your game, pick it up again on Windows.
Nice.
And if you have a friend who plays it on Windows and you play it on Xbox, you can play together multiplayer.
Oh, that's a huge perk, because all the time I'm just jamming on my Xbox, because my PC, I call it a supercomputer, but it's really not. I still rock some old GTX cards, but, you know, my Xbox One, I know it's going to work. So that's a nice perk.
It's like a mix. So, like, a lot of people have terrible PCs. They want to play it on Xbox, but a lot of people have really great gaming PCs that are much more powerful than the console, and so we've had people use their Windows version as an Xbox dedicated server, so that their friends can play, you know, and connect always to their Windows box, which is just like running the game all the time.
Nice.
So you can use it in cool ways for sure.
So what is Astroneer? Someone brand new, they're like, what is this cool logo? What is it? What's your pitch?
It's a space exploration sandbox game. There's survival elements, there's creative elements. So you play as a solo astronaut that we call Astroneers, the pioneers or engineers. You play solo, you can play co-op, up to four people. You are the sort of vanguard, kind of an adorable vanguard of humanity on these exotic solar systems. And you don't really know why you're there when the game starts, and so you're exploring, you're uncovering wrecks, you're researching things to unlock new objects to build out your base. We're in early access, so a lot of the end game elements and narrative story is not really present.
Okay.
And we're building out a lot of the underlying foundational features. We put out a lot of big new updates recently that have been pretty well received, so pretty proud of that.
That's awesome.
The game has a lot to. I think it has a lot of content to offer right now, but we're constantly putting in new content every month.
That's really cool. And even when I was playing it over a year ago at this point, I mean, you just drop down into this planet. You have no idea anything. And to me, it was really cool. You have this gun, you're like sucking up stuff, you're doing all this stuff, converting into metals. But what I really thought was really interesting about the game is the collaboration aspect of it, which is that, I'm all about sucking up, creating these tubes, getting my oxygen as far. But all my friends, they're like engineer brains, and they're out creating this base that is doing all sorts of stuff. It's crazy. So can you talk about the other aspects of what you're doing and what the end goal is, I guess?
Yeah, well, like you say, it's a cooperative game. We didn't really want to build in too much competition. There's no weaponry. You're not really killing each other, certainly. There are hostile elements that are gonna threaten you, that could kill you. But it's a game for all ages. It's a game you can play with your kids and family. It's about helping each other proceed. And so the goal, like, you know, what are you doing on these planets? There's the sort of public backstory, and then there's like mysteries
that
we haven't talked about yet. But the public backstory is that it takes place kind of in the near future, where humanity has discovered a novel way to travel between the stars. So you have like faster than light speed travel, so you can get to these new solar systems. but all the other technology behind space exploration is familiar. It's like similar to what we already have. It's like Mark Watney in The Martian, right? And so there's this, like, because there's this cheap way to get between the stars, it's like there's a groundswell of volunteers coming in who want to be space explorers. It's sort of like the Klondike Gold Rush, but in space. So you got thousands of people coming in. And they're not like NASA astronauts. They're just like basic training, thrown out into space, drop on a planet, you know, try to strike it rich. So that's the kind of setting you're in. And so you're being outfitted by this corporation called Exo Corporation, and they're just dropping on these planets and like kind of leaving you to fend for yourself. And if you find valuable stuff, cool. That of course isn't the end of the story.
Okay, so, got it.
We're working, you know, there's going to be a lot of content coming in that.
Well, you brought a trailer of all some of the new content. Do you want to play it back?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is a little trailer for our last update, which we called the base building update. It came out in February. If you had played the game when we launched, there was a certain method that you used to build out your bases, and it kind of spiderwebbed out in this network kind of graph thing. And you couldn't reposition anything. You didn't have a lot of choice in how you laid things out. So this update kind of completely changes all of that up. And so you can repack your base, move everything around, customize everything, have mobile bases. There's a lot more to do now. So I'll get it going here.
Yeah, let's take a look. These things just brought me back to the first moment I played it. Just like, look, everything's so happy, like going around, and then all of a sudden, like there's these big windstorms. It reminds me of WALL-E, you know? Like, I remember everyone's like, get inside, like get underneath, and there's all these other great aspects to it. So what was the inspiration for this? Is everyone on the team like big space buffs, or like what's going on?
Kind of, yeah. So like the team, when we founded the team, we were four people, and that's kind of what brought us together, right? We were like really into aerospace history, you know, from like NASA and the moon landings, the Mercury astronauts, you know, through to the Apollo program, up to this sort of modern direction of private space exploration. So we wanted to make a game that kind of was a bit inspiring to people to maybe get involved in the subject. I think it's super exciting. I think it's kind of like a defining issue of the time right now. So, you know, you look at what SpaceX is doing, Elon Musk and Bezos, and this sort of like billionaire rivalry going on. Yeah. It's like kind of like the cool, fertile ground for a narrative. And so, yeah. And then, at the time that we kind of came together, I was really being inspired by things like Cosmos, like Carl Sagan's original presentation of Cosmos, and then Neil deGrasse Tyson put up the new kind of reboot of it. And those things really focus on the sort of joy of discovery and the sort of like the wonder, like almost like religious wonder at the beauty of the universe. And so that's a lot of this, like the spirit of the game kind of comes from that, like the colorful nature, the happy kind of surface to it is we want people to feel joy in playing the game and discovering new things, predominantly at least, right? And then there's also like terrifying moments too, because space is dangerous.
So it is.
We wanted to present that dynamic.
Yeah, it's really cool because I'm in Seattle. I've been in Seattle for quite a few years, and I even go to the Science Center up there, the Pacific Science Center, and I'll go into the planetarium, and I'll just take you like the stars tonight, you know what I mean? And to me, it just brings that kid side of me back that was learning about space. And now you're right, you know, with SpaceX and all these great ventures, some of the stuff that is happening, everyone in our Slack channels is like dropping out, like, are you watching this? Like, those like self-propelled down, you know, it's this like newfound glory of space exploration.
And you get like Elon Musk saying things like, I'm going to die on Mars, or I want to die on Mars. I don't know if you've heard of the Mars One project, and it's like they're taking volunteers for people who are going to be the first colonists, and it's like, you kind of have to be a little bit crazy to want to do that. But and so to me, that's what the astroneers are. It's like these kind of crazy people who've just thrown themselves out there with potentially no hope of coming back, you know. But maybe if they do come back, it's like for glory.
Yeah. So let's talk about the game development side of it. You know, you said you're on Xbox, you have it on the Windows Store, you have it on Steam, you have it on a bunch of different platforms, and there was different aspects to it. So what are some of the challenges of how it was built, and how was it built? Like, what is some of the development side of it? Mm-hmm. You were at the developers conference, so can you talk a little bit about the dev side of it and how you built out the team?
Yeah, so I said before it was four of us to start, it's a very small team, and the game kind of grew in scope quite a bit. So we spent the first year building out a version of the game that was like a proof of concept. It had the spherical worlds that were deformable, so it had the procedural terrain, but it almost presented more like an RTS.
Okay.
It was also tonally a lot darker, and played, and then the interactions were very like familiar, so like a lot more like Minecraft.
Oh, I see, got it.
And we kind of, so some of the technology for that version of the game survives in the present game, but we really rebuilt about a year in. We kind of pivoted or rebuilt the game with the new tone. We switched to Unreal Engine 4, so it's built in Unreal Engine, and went into a new direction with some of the, you know, with the visual aesthetic of the game and the interaction style too. So I said before that it was kind of traditional, where you'd interact with you drop down base elements, walk up to them, press a button, and bring up like a grid menu, and that's how you'd interact. And so you had this dynamic where like you had this world where you could walk around and can kind of see things and deform the terrain, so the ground itself felt really dynamic. But everything else was like you're just interacting with menus. And so we had this feedback that was like, it's cool that you can shape the terrain, but then I can't do anything with it. Like, I can't, like...
What's the purpose?
Nothing's, like, physical in the world. It feels really static. So we were like, okay, well, we wanted to get that, that jury rigging feeling of, like, being an astronaut on another planet. Something goes wrong. You've got to figure something out. We want that to feel really deeply interactive. And so we're like, let's try making everything in the game in-world, so that instead of interacting with the menu, you're just like plucking things up in the world and socketing them into each other and like creating functionality that way. And we just ran with that idea.
Nice.
So that's where like what we call the diegetic interactions come from. And then the tone of the game shifted because of that, the tone of the game shifted to being a lot more toy-like, because then it felt like you're playing with your stuff. It is more toy-like.
Yeah, and so, like, it reminds me of playing with my Legos.
Exactly.
It gave me that feeling. I was a big Lego kid growing up. It reminded me of plugging these parts, and then what was cool about it is I kept discovering new aspects of what the team has built. A good example is the backpack that I have on. There's all these like gizmos and gadgets, and there's, of course, you know, air that you need, and it's fun when someone else does something and you're like, oh, I didn't know that radar did that, or this different piece.
Part of the challenge of any game is like teaching people how to use it and how to play it. And so what we found is that when we went in this direction, when everything is really tactile and in the world, you can teach people visually, and you can let people just kind of explore, just socket things together, piece things together, see what works, see what doesn't. Like, you know, when you're a kid, nobody like gives you the Lego tutorial. You just start snapping things together and seeing what you like, and then maybe your friend does something and you're like, that's super cool, I want to do that too. And so like that's kind of the direction that the game evolved in.
Yeah, I love it. So you mentioned a little bit that the game is out, people can get it. You kind of did this pre-alpha, and now it's in this alpha. So can you talk about the stages of the development? Like, when you guys were ready to release, like, did you have a private beta? Like, I'm thinking, like, a lot of game developers may be getting started. Like, what would you teach them about that release process? Because there's so many new ways of getting your game out, whether it's I'm going to do a Kickstarter, or I'm going to release it on Greenlight, or I'm going to put it over here. What are some of the things that the team learned from that process?
I mean, it really depends on your the specific situation that the team is in. We thought about doing a Kickstarter. So we made that prototype, and we did a sort of a friends and family super closed beta kind of thing with like 30 or 50 people. And that's where we developed, we got a lot of that early feedback that caused us to change the direction of the game. So that was super critical. And I'm very happy that we didn't like release the game in that state. Once we kind of had the final direction for the game, then it was like, okay, how do we get it built? How do we get it built to our satisfaction and in a timely fashion? We only had 4 people at the time, and we're like, well, and then eventually we were, I think, 6 people by the time we released into early access. And we kind of knew that we couldn't make the game to the extent that we wanted to build it with just those people and just our personal funds.
Yeah.
And so we were thinking about Kickstarter. But there were things about those models that we didn't really like. In Kickstarter, as an example, it can work, but it kind of hinges on making a lot of promises early in development that maybe you're not sure if they're going to pan out, but you have to try to keep them anyway. And then there's a lot of other things, like you tend to have to start to focus on all these kind of bonus tier packages and things that you're gonna promise to send people when the game is finished, which can be distracting from the actual game. So we're like, we want to just focus on building the game itself. So ultimately, early access was a way that we could get the game out there for people to get their hands on, and also kind of ensure that the game could get made.
Scale correctly, because there's servers. How did the server part of it work? Is there servers that are managing everything, or what's that technical side of it?
The servers, we don't actually have servers. Cool. So we have co-op multiplayer, but it's when you're connecting to a game, you're connecting directly to your friend.
Okay.
So that's like called a listen server. It's sort of more peer-to-peer. It's not a dedicated server, which is something that we are building. So yeah, we use the we were poor and very time constrained. So we didn't build out our own multiplayer backend service infrastructure, which is where you'd have to have your own servers, your own kind of player login system. So we use Steam directly. We use the Windows and Microsoft infrastructure directly. That was one of the reasons that we chose to be on very few stores. So. So we're on Steam, we're on the Microsoft platform, and those are sort of separate multiplayer ecosystems. We didn't want to be on a lot of other stores. Like there's other stores out there that you could be on PC, you could be on GOG, you could be on Green Man Gaming, stuff like that. We wanted to avoid that because it meant that if you bought on one of those other stores, you can't play with your friend who bought on Steam.
Got it.
And that is still the case right now. If you buy it on Xbox and your friend buys it on Steam, like you can't really play together. So we're working on, at this stage of development, building those dedicated servers.
Oh, I see.
That would allow people to play together.
Yeah.
So that's pretty exciting.
It's kind of taking what you have, and I think you kind of hinted really good something about Kickstarter is, and I always talk about it in software development, is if you add something, you can't really remove it. And if you promise stuff, you have the expectations there.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you went into an early access just to say, like, is this working? You know that it's working, just getting the feedback. Is that multiplayer working? And how did you learn from the process, though? Was it hopping in a lot of live streams, or what was the learning aspect of it?
We came in super hot to early access. And it really caught us off guard. Like, we were, we've sold a lot of copies. We had a lot of fan support. I was telling myself at the time that I would have been happy to get like 5% of what we got in the first year, and 5 or 10%, and we got way more than that. And so we were kind of planning on having a quiet start and then working with an audience of, smaller audience of dedicated fans that had bought into the game and listened to their feedback. What we got was like a sort of rush of a ton of people, which we were super thankful for.
Yeah.
But that also means that only a handful of those people are really committed to the early access concept and are really going to be engaged in the feedback. And a lot of the people are just like, they want to just have fun and play the game and not have any bugs.
Yeah.
And have a good experience, and we want to give that to people, but we were perhaps a little bit less prepared than we could have been. And I think if I would have done it again, there's like, definitely would have like put even more effort in on the stability and the performance side of things. We launched with so PC you have to handle such a huge variety of different hardware.
Yeah.
And I came from console development. You know, I worked on Halo.
Yeah, one.
We're working on the Xbox 360, work on the Xbox One. There's one set of hardware.
Yeah.
You test it on one machine, everything works. You're guaranteed that it works on everybody's box.
Yeah.
On PC, we launched the game, and of course, like, you think you're going to launch and then like take a break for a week, but it was like, launch the game, immediately start getting emails from people saying like, game doesn't run on my machine. So we had like whole classes of processors that the game couldn't boot for, and so we're like putting out day one patches, day two patches to like make sure people can play the game. I mean, my advice to people releasing games on PC if they've never done it before is like, at least, you know, do some compatibility testing, get a lot of machines in, get different hardware, test it on as many things as you can. Make sure that the people can play the game. Like, bugs, maybe there's some flaws in the game.
Yeah.
But if they can't launch it at all, that's a problem.
They get real mad real fast. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we mentioned that it's on the Windows Store, mm-hmm. that you can download it and buy it, and then you also get it immediately for your Xbox One.
Yeah.
So you basically have the game twice, and then you can cross-play with anyone. I think that's what we were doing too, cross-play. So what were some of the motivations to go down that route? You didn't have to, right? You already had the Steam part of it. What was the motivation there, and what was some of the things that you liked about that process?
We always wanted it to be a cross-play game. So whether you bought it on Steam, like, no matter what, where you got the game, we want people to be able to play together. But to do that ordinarily, like to do that between, say, Steam and the consoles, is quite a lot of work. It was too much for us to handle at the size that we were at when we launched. But the XPA program gives you that with a lot less effort.
Okay.
Because you're building for UWP is the Universal Windows Platform. It means that in theory you're building one version of the app, and it just runs on both platforms. So that allowed us to test the cross-platform experience without having to build out all the other infrastructure. Because there are things like in our game, the planets are totally procedural, and you can deform all of the terrain in multiplayer, and so, you know, being able to fairly easily get that stood up and tested, and make sure that if you're playing on an Xbox and you're playing on a PC, which could be very different hardware,
very different hardware,
you're getting the same results and that it is compatible, allows us to kind of baby step towards sort of full cross-platform, cross-network capabilities with dedicated servers and things like that. And it's just like a great value proposition for people. Being able to say, hey, you buy it once and you have it for multiple devices is really cool.
That makes sense. Yeah. And on the developer side of it, we were talking a little bit kind of about like what services the Microsoft ecosystem offers. Can you talk about what the team enjoyed about that actual back-end bits and how the submission process goes? Because I used to work on Xbox 360 games,
yeah.
going into Xbox One, the Xbox Live Arcade program. I know about certification processes,
yeah.
which are fun. So can you talk a little bit about that, like learning experiences?
Yeah, so like getting your game, you're talking about getting your game published, basically. Like
basically getting your game published,
what it takes to go through that on all the different platforms. And you're right, like if you're coming from console development, you know that like going live on console is a big process. Certification is a big process, but they developed the it was then called the Windows Store. It's now called the Microsoft Store. It's more unified. They developed it really for like app development on the Windows phones and small app development on Windows. And so they really streamlined those processes. So you have really like push. There is a certification process where they're going to check your storefront. They're going to check that the game runs and doesn't crash. But it's really push button. It's really streamlined. That's cool. Designed for, you know, like getting small apps onto the phones. And so they brought that to game development, and they've been trying to unify that with the with Xbox games, Xbox Live, and you know, enabling self-publishing for independent games on the Microsoft platform. And so you know, certification is a lot smoother. They made it a lot faster. There's different features that they offer now, like you can do flighting, where you can release the game on for selected retail audiences, like maybe just your employees or just your friends and family, or you know, like a selected wider audience. You can do A/B testing. They have a bypass program where, like, if your game passed cert many times in a row, then they'll sort of like auto pass you, and you can test it yourself.
Yeah.
Until you get a problem, and then they'll kind of kick you back into purgatory. But there's also a lot of features that I kind of liked about the Microsoft Store, especially as a self-published independent developer that doesn't have the support of a big publisher who's kind of used to, like, you know, who has the publishing process dialed in, like just kind of, you know, churning out the sausages.
Yeah, they got all the marketing in place. Yeah. They've done it a whole bunch of times. Or you're coming from a big franchise that, like Halo, that's gonna sell.
Yeah,
right?
So there's, you know, like a whole bunch of stuff. Like you're an independent developer. You're generally heads down on just building the game, but then it comes time to actually get the game to market, and there's all this like go-to-market activity that you've got to do. That is what publishers are usually offering people, and that's stuff like localizing your game, getting your age ratings done, you know, setting up telemetry and crash reporting, and like all these things that aren't really related to the. They're kind of commodity features. They're not related. They're sort of the same for all games. They're not related to the game itself. But if you've never done them before and you're doing it yourself, it's time consuming. And so I think what the Microsoft Store offered that other platforms didn't was that a lot of these things are kind of starting to roll into the platform as features that you can just take advantage of. So age rating is like one of my favorite examples. Normally, or in the past, to get age rated, you'd have to do a submission with like all the individual agencies. You have ESRB in North America, you've got PEGI in Europe, you have Australia and New Zealand have like a COB, there's CRO in Japan. Like there's like every region and country has their own agency. You've got to do a submission, it costs money. Yeah. It takes a ton of time. It's like the kind of thing that like indie developers just don't do, and they just don't get age rated. Which would disqualify you for releasing for the Xbox, for example.
Yeah,
you have to be age rated.
You got to do it.
So for the Microsoft Store, they've got a partnership with IARC, which is the International Age Rating Coalition. They kind of for digital titles have a unified submission process. You kind of fill out a survey, describe the game, describe all of the, you know, most violent aspects of your game, and then they evaluate that, and they partner with all of the regional ratings agencies.
Yeah.
And you get your ratings back. It's free.
That's
cool. You get rated for everybody.
That's nice, yeah.
And then that allows you to submit. And again, like it was designed because they had this volume, this like app volume for mobile apps that they needed to streamline this process for. And now we get to take advantage of it.
Kind of like streamlining the game release process. It's really cool.
Yeah, so that's a good feature. Telemetry is another one that Windows Store does. That's pretty good. So you get pretty good visibility into what your game is doing and the kind of composition of your audience and what your daily active users are. You get some interesting information on what kinds of players coming from Xbox Live or in your game, what your retention is, and like what kind of effect your updates are having on the audience.
Oh, that's cool. So you can kind of track your progress automatically of how things are, just the health of the game, essentially.
Exactly, the health of the game. And so it's the kind of thing that's really important nowadays to have. If you're a bigger company, you're going to have these services set up, or you're going to be partnered with sort of heavyweight outsourced companies that can do this stuff. If you're a small indie, you may not have that, so it's really useful to have that built into the platform.
So, all right, so in the last few minutes here, what's next for not only System Era, but for Astroneer? Like, what's next? What can everyone that's gone out now that they've purchased it and they're ready to play, what can they expect coming next?
Well, we've been, we had a period after we launched Early Access where we kind of went dark. We didn't have a lot of updates because we kind of had to scale up the team and then really redesign some of the core features to make them scalable. But we've been putting out big, regular monthly updates since about October of last year.
Nice.
So we've really started to reorganize the game and update the features and get a lot more content in. So people can expect to see a lot more content rolling in month to month, every 2 months, major updates like the one that we just looked at. And we are really, we don't want to be one of those games who's in early access for like 5 years. We are aiming to be out of early access within the next year. So we're working hard towards that. And I think that people will be pretty happy with a lot of the content that's coming in.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you for coming on here at GDC Live. It's been, honestly, I'm just like inside, just so excited to just like have the opportunity to talk with you. I'm going to go home, install all the updates, get all the hotness.
Yeah.
Make sure you check it out, Astroneer. Just go buy it. It's absolutely amazing. Because I love it. It makes me feel like a kid all over again, especially playing with friends.
Yeah.
Brendan, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
Yeah,
thanks
for
having
me. Stay tuned for more from GDC Live.